In every age, God raises people up to speak the truth to the world in a way that is currently relevant. Though our opinions should not be held with the same esteem as the biblical canon, we still carry the hope of Christ to the world. Our society has forgotten what it means to follow Christ. The bright lights of truth seekers are barely visible in the dim twilight of a post-Judeo-Christian society. We all see the darkness coming. All we can hope is to share the light that He has entrusted to us. This is Modern Apocrypha. Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end know dark is right, because their words had forked no lightning, they do not go gentle into that good night. Good men the last wave by, crying how bright their frail deeds might have danced in a green bay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Wild men who caught and sang the sun in flight, and learned too late they grieved it on its way. Do not go gentle into that good night. Grave men near death, who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Welcome to Modern Apocrypha. I'm Jared.
And I'm Greg.
And that is Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night by Dylan Thomas. It's a substantial portion of that poem, and I've made a tradition of posting that to my social media on the 4th of July for a number of years now, because it pretty well encapsulates my feeling about what America has become, what it has degraded into, and what the ideal that is America has become in reality.
It certainly,
you know, go ahead.
Shifting. It certainly has been shifting. You had said that you wanted to have a discussion about 4th of July, and I took an Alex Jonesian view of it, as I typically do for large sloganistic things. It's the Independence Day is a particularly poignant bullet point in the change in America, just through its history and how it is handled and what it means to Americans, what it means to the government as opposed to Americans. So it's a great bullet point for a study point of the changes in America for sure.
Well, it is, but you know, it also hits that visceral place in all of us. And it does to a degree, you know, I have said before, though, just speaking for myself here, that I have this sort of, this deep grief for what the ideals of America have come to and for what it's turned into. You know, it is not what it should be.
Agreed that it is not what it should be. We have this difference of opinion, I think, where I hear from you that there's some big change, and I agree there's a change, but for me, the change is over the course of 100 years, not 5.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, the change in America has been very much over the course of 100 years, and even more than that, really. It has been. And you know, there are a lot of people who would argue that even back at the beginning of our nation, that George Washington and company were a bunch of Masons, Freemasons, and they were aligned with, you know, with Satan, with the enemy at some level. And I don't know how much of that I believe, man.
I'm not of the opinion that the founding fathers were any great holy men or priests or anointed. They were just men, but they were good men and they were trying their best. And that's better than we do these days most of the time.
True. And you know, I think you could make accusations about a bunch of them being Freemasons, but I don't think that changes the reality of what got instantiated into the world with the founding of America. And that was a nation that was a city on a hill. It was a light before the world of what people could become and what people could do. And it was because we had Protestant ideals, because we had a Christian culture, because it was the closest thing the world had ever seen to a nation that was conceived in liberty under God. Well, and the under God part matters. Go ahead.
That's something that just drives the beast absolutely crazy, is that whenever you do open it up in the name of God and proclaim to the people that you're going to follow God's word, then they're bound. They can no longer go back until 100 years of degradation. The people will hold their hands to what they've said, regardless of what they believe. They spouted Christian belief. They were held to Christian belief. The people kept them in line, right? So it wasn't that I'm not saying that they did or didn't believe in what they were saying. I'm saying what they said was pointing towards an ideal that they were then held to in a secular way, right? Irregardless of the religious implication. They said this is what they were going to do, and they were held to it.
Well, and it was the nature of the people of the country. You know, it's like, I think it was it Benjamin Franklin who said that the Constitution was created for a moral and religious people and could not govern any other. And I could look up the exact quote, but that gets at the spirit of it, you know, that was what our Constitution was created for. And what we have in the modern day is a mockery. It isn't even just a death. It's a mockery. If you look at what we as a country have exported as we have become an empire, and I know you don't like me describing America as an empire, but I will argue that that is exactly what we are. We are a country that exercises power over the rest of the world in some fashion. We don't do it by name, but we do it in actuality, and we do it by having the world reserve currency, just for example, and by basically sucking the wealth out of the rest of the world by inflating the currency at a fairly rapid rate over the past 100 years, to the point where the value flows into America and the currency flows out of America, and the world is kept in poverty partly because of America. And that is a tragic thing.
Well, and I would push back on that, not because you're not correct in the actions that are happening. Where I would parse it is that you say America as if all Americans are somehow involved when our vote doesn't count and we don't get the benefit and we're just as mad as every other poor person in the world.
Doesn't matter.
They see it that way, but we are just as mad at the people doing this as everyone else in the world is.
To a degree, sure. And as far as it goes, that's great, man. But, you know, the reality is we at least have, it's sort of a great mockery, a great reversal of what we had at the War for Independence, where there's no taxation without representation is the ideal that the founders of America drove Britain out upon. That was the rock they stood on when they drove Britain out. And we have been taxing the entire rest of the world by huge amounts for 100 years. And we are the only ones who even supposedly get a vote. And I mean, yeah, they get to vote by choosing whether they use the dollar, but the irony is just killer.
It is.
And for anybody who actually would argue with me that that's what we're doing, if you look at what, okay, so I have to back up a little bit and let me go into this. Let me go into what inflation is just a little bit so that it's not just a claim I'm making, so that I'm actually substantiating it a little bit. Inflation is the decrease in value of the currency on purpose over time to buy the same relative amount of goods. So it's an increase in the amount of currency relative to a lesser increase in the amount of goods in circulation. And by contrast, if you look at what was going on during the late 1800s and mid to late 1800s, early 1900s, when we had a real gold standard, that was not the case. We actually had general deflation because the amount of gold that was being dug up was actually less than the amount of increase in goods and standard of living, and basically the pie got bigger faster than the amount of money got bigger. And so the common man could maintain and grow their wealth much easier than in an inflationary environment. And I recently saw somebody on Bitcoin Twitter talking about this, and they were saying, one person said to them that, yeah, you don't have to have a deflationary environment for a stable currency. And the guy said, no, you're right. You don't have to have a deflationary environment. But in any inflationary environment, what you're going to see is huge wealth concentrations at the top increasing as the inflation increases. And guess what? As we've seen inflation increase over the past few years, we've also seen the wealth concentration at the top get bigger and bigger. And so it turns out, as you get deflationary money, a money with a supply that does not grow very quickly, the people who are furthest from the money printer are not terribly affected by it. But when you have an increasing money supply, it's the people who are closest to the money printer. So the elites in the society first, then the people of America, then the elites in other countries, then the people of other countries are the ones who see the most gain from the value of the money going down over time. It just transfers the value into fewer and fewer hands the more you inflate the money.
Do you really believe that it's wealthy Americans, regular Americans in that order, and not wealthy Americans, wealthy Europeans, then wealthy Africans, whatever? Because I feel like all the wealthy...
I mean, yeah, okay. You can look at the elite of the world as being a cartel of sorts, right? It depends on what percentage you're picking on. If you're picking on the top 10% of society, then it's a different picture than if you're picking on the top 1%. If you're looking at the top 1%, then what you said is correct, 100%. If you're looking at the top 15, 20% of a society, then it'd be wealthy Americans, other Americans, wealthy Europeans, other Europeans, because the top echelons of Europe, when you're just talking the top 20%, don't see the same favor from the money printer that even middle class to lower class Americans do. If you look at, for example, the median income of Great Britain, it's lower than 47 out of 50 of the U.S. states or something. It's actually...
Is that including their current mass immigration problem, or is that typical?
It's been that way for 20, 30 years. So those figures I started finding back 15, 20 years ago. So it's typical of just the way you see money being doled out over the globe. And even despite that, you know, as a world, we're still wealthier in a lot of ways than our forefathers were for hundreds of years. We have basically the normal person these days lives like a king did 200 years ago, because we have so many automated servants. We have cars, we have refrigerators, we have toasters, we have vacuum cleaners, all the things just make it so that our standard of living is so much higher than it used to be. But that doesn't mean that what's going on is just. And what group of people is responsible for the injustice? Well, first off, call it the military-industrial complex, call it the deep state, call it whatever you like. They are the most responsible. But the next in the layer of responsibility is the American people, because we have more capacity to do something about it than anybody else in the world does, because of that world reserve currency status that we sort of got by the insanity that happened during World Wars I and II. And if you look at what happened behind the scenes there, which we haven't really talked about much, the upshot of it was America getting that sort of most favored nation in the world status of the world reserve currency. And it was right around that same time, around World War I, when we saw the Federal Reserve initially created. And we have not traced the history of the Federal Reserve. There's a couple of guests I'd love to have on to talk about that, specific people. I haven't actually tried to approach them, but it would be cool to talk about that exact subject with certain people, just because it's so poignant what that big picture view is and what it has done to the world and to our society. But the upshot of it all, when you come right down to it, is that we are closest to the money printer. Thus, the value in the world has been migrating into America for 100 years. And we've really seen, we've seen the benefits of that.
I'm curious on the self-deprecating side of things, how much, other than moving to Bitcoin, which is currently available, but was not previously, you could have done some gold trading directly with, you know, little laminated sheets of gold or whatever. But there was very little power or control. You could look at someone like Tucker Carlson is at the height of the level of someone who could fight back. And I mean, take your entire life, put it in a ball and put it at risk for one sentence before you're kicked off mainstream media. Prior to right now, this is the first time we've had, you know, an open discussion outside of what was the newspapers, the radio and the TV, which was, you know, some big corporate owned thing. I don't understand how it could be an American's, even if an American stood up, they would just be shot. There would be no point to it.
You're looking at this as an American. I'm looking at this as all Americans. So here's the tragedy of it all, as near as I can tell. We as Americans are proud of exporting our democracy, exporting our values, exporting the things that are good into the world and being a beacon on a hill and all of that, when the reality of what we've been doing for 100 years is the exact opposite of that in most of the ways that matter. Ever since the Vietnam War, it's been kind of the opposite of that. And so could an American make a difference then? Well, you know, I don't know. I think there are things that maybe could have been done, but I don't think more than one in 10,000 or one in 100,000 people ever even came close to seeing as clearly as we see it today. I don't think that the facts were available to them. And we don't, you know, God doesn't judge people based on the ideals. He judges them based on what they are, what is available to them. We know that because we know that until the law is made manifest, this people are not held accountable for the sin in their lives on a moral level. And by the same token, until you understand the depths of degeneracy and depravity that your nation is responsible for, you cannot really be held responsible for what they're doing. Now, you can be held responsible for sticking your head in the sand, for choosing not to see, but you can't be held responsible for what other people or spiritual beings are perpetrating without your knowledge, even if you happen to be in the vicinity or, you know, one of their unwitting accomplices. That's not, you're not held to the same level of accountability. Where now you and I, with what we know and with Bitcoin available to us, if we're not operating out of that knowledge and trying our best to change things with whatever little tools we have, then we're going to be held accountable for that. And that's not a good thing for us. That's pretty sad. And especially as we look at the world around us, you know, years before we ever started this podcast, I told my wife that I wanted to go to holding as few US dollars as possible and using Bitcoin for transactions when we could manage it. Not because I thought Bitcoin was going to make us rich, and it hasn't, for the record. We're on the lower end of lower class in a lot of ways, but sure. The point is still that it wasn't for that reason. It was that I was not okay with what I saw our country doing, and I wanted to do whatever little tiny bit I could to change it in a substantial way. And that is what Bitcoin is doing right now. I've told my dad over and over again, Bitcoin is the solution to the current problem that is almost certainly going to cause the next problem. But we have to solve the current problem before the next problem comes up, and we can't be guessing at the next problem. We just have to take what we got.
It would fix one of the problems we have. I'll wait for the full explanation of the big problem I see with the world. Here after our break, well, I want to go through another side of 4th of July that is affecting the world. And it's not about who's in control as much as it is about how much we can wag the dog. How, you know, the concept of wagging the dog, and how the people at the top can influence and lie to and affect the people, then the masses. That,
yeah,
breaking that is in process, right? Whether that's through TikTok and open discourses that you just can't stop. But it doesn't matter if you convince everybody that has Bitcoin to do the wrong thing with it.
True to a degree, though. Here's the thing about Bitcoin that I think is actually revolutionary, and that is that when people move to using Bitcoin, which I think is fairly inevitable, and, you know, maybe we should go over that again in an episode sometime. It's been a long time since we actually talked about it in any depth, but basically, if people start using that as the currency, in order for there to be inflation in Bitcoin, in order for there to be a Cantillon effect in Bitcoin, which is basically what I'm talking about being close to the money printer. Okay. In order for that to happen in Bitcoin, the rules have to change completely. And as it stands, changing those rules is pretty dang near impossible. I don't think it's possible.
Are you wondering how I, as a megalomaniac, could ruin Bitcoin?
I'm saying you can't. I'm asserting that you, as a megalomaniac,
can you hide each individual Bitcoin, or is each individual Bitcoin unique?
No, they're unique. You can't hide anything.
If I'm a megalomaniac and I say that we have too much money in the world right now and it's a problem, only this number through this number is able to be used. And if I find that you've used one of the unallowable numbers, I'm coming to your house to kill you. Right? There you go.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So I understand what you're saying. We can get into the minutia on this sometime. Now is not the time for that. And what I'm getting at, though, is that as an overall, when you look at the game theory of Bitcoin, it's going to eat money. And what that's going to cause is it's going to shut down the money printer at the Fed, which means we are no longer going to be sucking all the value out of the world. It's going to start accruing where it actually belongs, whether that's on the individual level or on the country level or whatever, unless it is taken away by force. We still have taxation. You know, if somebody comes to my house and takes my Bitcoin, whether it's the federal government or the thug next door, that's, you know, they steal my, that, you know, you steal somebody's key. And there are ways around that, by the way. You can have geographically distributed multi-sig and stuff like that so that you can't get at the majority of your funds. And I highly recommend that people who have any substantial amount of money in Bitcoin actually look into that, because it's important.
Here's something that I see as a generalized problem with that concentration of power, whether it's the 1% or just those people that are frugal over time collecting a vast amount of Bitcoin. There's a psychological study that's one of the examples that Jordan Peterson throws out, that even among rats, the big one and the small one will lay down and allow the big one will lay down and allow the small one to win some percentage of the time, or the little one just won't play anymore.
Right.
At what point do we just stop using Bitcoin? Because there's no point. You guys have it. It's your thing. I'm not a part of it. Whatever.
Okay. Again, you're getting into minutia of Bitcoin, and I don't mind doing that.
It doesn't really matter if it's Bitcoin or if it's dollars. At some point, I don't feel like, as the small rat, that it's worth it for me to play anymore. That, I feel like, is where we're at with the dollar.
Well, and that's actually, when you saying that, you're right. That is where we are with the dollar. And that is actually what Bitcoin intends to stop and will stop. Because once you understand the dynamics of economics, you can't do that with a money that has a fixed supply and an open exchange. It's just not possible.
Well, and if you've got fixed supply and exchange the way that would be, in a wartime situation, say that Britain needs to borrow 1 million rounds for World War II, in the Bitcoin world, do you make up Bitcoin for that? Do you create debt to be paid that's not? I mean, it's a strange place, right? Because
what did they do under the gold standard? That's the answer to your question. If you want to actually understand all this, you actually have to understand how economics worked under the gold standard. Because once you do, the light bulb goes on and you go, oh, that's how money really works. That's how economy really works when there isn't somebody messing with it and doing totally immoral things to it. That's how it works. And it works. It does. It actually works. It's why countries went broke when they went all imperial. It's why Spain went from the most powerful country in the world to one of the least powerful countries in the world over the course of a number of decades. It's why you had real change in power structures when countries got immoral. It's because it actually works.
It's an interesting position. I'm not going to agree or disagree because I'm not fully sure where I stand on it. So,
well, and you don't have the information or the understanding to really make a stand on it out of understanding. You'd have to make a stand out of ignorance. I don't recommend it. You actually need to understand the facts before you make a stand. So I'm with you on that. But getting back to sort of the point of this episode, right now where we're at in America, and this is what I really wanted to hammer on in the first part of the episode, is just how normal, ordinary Americans are starting to feel how tragic and how destroyed and how just the pathos of where we're at this moment in history with America being wrecked. Now, it has been for a long time, and when people actually start to understand that, it changes their perspective. But the fact is, it has been, and it is really sad. It's tragic, and it's heartbreaking. And that's where we're at, and I feel it too. And so when I rag on America, which I do fairly often, you know, I talk about how America is not a source of good in the world, how it's a source of evil. It's not because I don't feel that pull of the ideals that America stands for. I feel that pull, but it's because I have realized and accepted the truth of what is actually going on to the point where I just have to stand up for what's right, man. And America is not there. America's people are not there. And we'll talk about that in part two.
Sure. And I would just say that in the discussion for part two, as you go through, it's not just America. It's not just Europe. It's not just any large group. It's every large group. Large groups in aggregate tend to move away from the individual good.
They tend to move away from God. And the more connected societies are, the more when they move away from God, there fails to be a reset mechanism for that. And so, you know, because the whole world is sort of socially connected now, you don't have the Mongols who are running around across the Great Plains of America who are going to sweep in and take out the decadent American government. That's not a thing. Where when Europe got pretty bad, it was barbarians who came in, they stormed the gates, and they changed the whole culture. And it's God uses those forces to renew societies when they get really decadent. And we don't have that right now. And it's getting more and more connected. But again, going back and pointing back at it again, that feeling of we have lost our America, it's a tragedy because America stood for something. And now it's falling down. And that rage against the dying of the light has been in my heart for it for close to a decade now.
Yeah, certainly don't lay down. At least let them know where their they're selling the farm, selling out from under their kids.
We got a break?
Let's go ahead and do a break now.
All right. We'll be back in a minute.
Back in a minute, everyone.
As you can probably tell from the backdrop, there are new things happening here. This is my new sound studio for recording audiobooks. It's not quite done, but it's done enough that I can record an ad in it, and that's exciting. I also have an anthology that I'm just finishing now. It should be coming out real soon. I have book 2 in the Bright Star series is basically finished, other than some professional edits and the publishing, and I'm pushing on that pretty hard. I'm hoping that there will be news on that one in the near future. When it comes to audiobooks, I'm planning on recording both the anthology and Bright Star. And folks, I need support and help now more than ever. Bright Star is doing just fine. I'm perfectly happy with it, and I am expanding both my ground game and my marketing game, and things are just growing. But the best recommendation is a recommendation from a friend. So if you like what you see on Modern Apocrypha, take this as a recommendation to you. Bright Star is worth your time. And if you've read it and you like it, recommend it to somebody. Help me out getting the word out about this series. And be on the lookout. More's coming soon. Energemetrix6.com, E6universe.com, promo code Israel, 10% off.
I'd like to take a moment to thank all the people enjoying Modern Apocrypha. As many of you can see, I'm an avid coffee drinker, and I've been drinking North Arrow Coffee for a couple of pounds now. You can find North Arrow Coffee at northarrowcoffee.co, all one word, where they list coffee of the month and how green coffee is handled. I've been enjoying some of the number 4 Honduras and some of the number 10 Peru, available at northarrow.co. If you'd like to help support us even more, you can use discount code E6 for 10% off your coffee order today. Thank you.
And we're back.
Welcome back, everyone.
And my color is better.
Looking good over there. Yeah, you didn't actually take a second to mention that you have a new studio that you're almost finished with.
Yeah, you know, you can see the backdrop behind me. That's actually hung up temporarily. The wall behind it does have cloth on it. The ceiling has cloth on it. We haven't got the outlets properly cut out. We haven't got, you know, we're still working on some of this stuff, but also apparently when you put up a brand new backdrop and the color is very blue and the camera auto white balances, it turns you yellow. And so, you know, first segment, I was a little yellow there at the end and I'm like, okay, that's needing to be fixed. And so I hopefully got that tamed.
Yeah. Looking good so far. And overall, I think I'd take visual issues over audio issues for the podcast.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And you know, this room, I don't actually have a door yet, but once there's a door, it will hopefully be very, very soundproof because the wall is like that thick and it's clear, full of insulation and different layers of stuff. So
to catch all the sound.
Yeah. So good stuff on that score.
Oh, very fun. Well, I wanted to take a moment in this segment to look at some of the popular news about 4th of July. This is a segment that I found just from mainstream media discussing the general topic. It's only a few minutes long, and it's kind of in their words, right? This is kind of exactly how the government sees this day. So I thought this would be a good starting point for us.
Okay, well, here we go.
We often think of July 4th as U.S. Independence Day, but did you know it's Independence Day in many other countries as well? Nowadays, we celebrate by grilling with family, hitting the beach, and of course, some firework displays. But remember, this all started 246 years ago during the first organized celebration of Independence Day in Philadelphia. This is the day our founding fathers marked the nation's independence from Great Britain, and a conversation starter for your holiday cookout, perhaps. Three of our founding fathers, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and James Monroe, died on the 4th of July. So let's talk a little bit more about the history and the significance of this day. I'll give you a little food for thought for today's barbecue. I want to bring in ABC News contributor, presidential historian Mark Updegrove, who joins me now for more on the history of today. Hi, Mark. So July 4th has been observed as a federal holiday in the U.S. since 1941. But a lot of the traditions surrounding the holiday, they've been around for hundreds of years. How did this all start? And why are these traditions so important still today?
Well, it started in Philadelphia with the Declaration of Independence being ratified by the Continental Congress, the Second Continental Congress. They had actually come to accord on a declaration just 2 days earlier on July 2nd. John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, two of our principal founding fathers, believed that July 2nd was the day that would be celebrated in history. But the date that was etched in the Declaration of Independence is of course, July 4th, the day that it was ratified. It was a relatively uneventful day for the Congress, but that's what we remember because of the date on the Declaration. The American people really didn't know about the ratification of the document until several days later, and it was read outside of what is now Independence Hall on July 8th. And that was really when the first celebration of independence was held in our country.
Mark, how have varying events that have happened throughout history changed the way we celebrate 4th of July and what this day means?
You know, there are ebbs and flows, Diane, to how unified we are in this country. We are almost invariably unified when there is an existential threat to our country, and you see more manifest patriotism during that time. For instance, during World War II in last century and during the height of the Cold War, including the Cuban Missile Crisis in this millennium, we've seen it around the attacks on 9/11. We happen to be in a more divided period in our nation. We're focusing inward on what divides us, what not on what unites us. And I think what ultimately unites us is greater than what divides us, but so much is concentrated now on the things that pull us apart.
All right, Mark Updegrove, always great to have the historical perspective. Mark, thank you.
So that really does give you an idea. We had the initial Declaration of Independence in 1776 that was naturally celebrated by the populace. And that was co-opted by those people that were planning the join of the war. You noticed in a slight off the cuff that it was a natural holiday that was federalized in 1941. What else happened in 1941? December 7th, 1941 was Pearl Harbor. It was a lie that was held up to get America into the war. All of the propaganda of the holiday began in 1941.
Partly. There's actually more to it than that, too, though. And here's what I mean by that. It was around that time that a lot of things were being federalized, that a lot of things were going to the federal government. So before that era, most things were not federal holidays. You didn't have a lot of federal holidays before that era. Instead, you had stuff was determined by the states and by the people, and they did their thing at their level without being dictated to by a national government. It was around that era that we had a tightening of the centralization of control in America. So, yes, you're right. It was, I don't want to diminish the point you made because it's a valid point that the holiday was co-opted for use as wartime propaganda by a particular cabal that had a vested interest in doing something, yes. But at the same time, a lot of that was just happening at the time when we had the centralization of control. And that was around the time when we saw America start to fall.
Mm-hmm. It was post-Dust Bowl, FDR and the Great Bargain. Is that what they called it? The beginning of Medicare and all that?
The words are escaping me right now. I don't think it's bargain, but You know how it is. You get in here and you're trying to record something and you suddenly can't pull the words to mind. I know this, but I can't remember it right now.
Right. That's sort of removing
the New Deal.
The New Deal. Thank you. But turning over authority relinquishing yourself from independent judgment is a terrible problem, right? It's a systemic problem because if you don't care for yourself, clean your own room, right, and have that go from top to bottom, rather from bottom to top, not the other way around. If it's not bottom to top, it's very difficult to listen to a tyrant saying, "Do what I say, not what I do," as opposed to those around you doing the same thing you're doing. It really is that different.
I
was just going to add in that I would always, I do now, and I really try to slam home that sloganism, right? If there's some slogan, if there's some broad umbrella, you're really throwing in bathwater with the baby, right? You don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, but anytime you've got a slogan, you've got baby and bathwater.
Yeah, that's fair. Put it a different way, you have an agenda that's trying to use the facts on the ground to accomplish whatever goal the people who have the agenda have in front of them. And so, yeah, you don't want to throw out the ideals with the rotten system that has come to take advantage of them in this case, but because those ideals that formed America were important and they were good. But at the same time, you have to recognize the rotten system. And, you know, speaking of rotten systems, we said something about touching on the presidential debate of a couple of days ago. And
yeah, that's been, it's been quite the unusual thing. Again, sloganizing and listening to some of the Democrats that don't know where to go. There is no argument for voting for a half-dead man. And the argument such that you should vote for a position and not a human being in the place, because there is no argument to vote for the human being. It is very telling that that's the way they've always been, for sure. And any other vocalization of their intent is just covering up their true intent.
Well, and you know, I see this from a couple of different angles, right? So the one angle, the political angle, is that, yeah, Joe Biden is half dead. Anybody who doesn't have a vested interest in seeing a fake reality has known this for years, literally years, that he is basically a walking corpse. He is, what they're doing to him is elder abuse, and it's terrible. And we know that, and that's obvious. But by the same token, when you look at what Donald Trump had to say during the debate, and you know, it isn't like listening to a Lincoln Douglas debate where they had actual things, substantial things that they were trying to put forth. It isn't even like listening to Ben Shapiro debating college students where he has actual substantial things he's saying to defend his position. Instead, they're just pointing at things that move in the direction they want people to go. They have no choice but to appeal to emotion. And it's because the system and the way elections are done and all of the things that surround it have devolved so far from when they started. You know, it's the whole thing, all of it, has gone a long way down the tube. And it's really sad to see to me. And then, you know, there's the fact that Joe Biden being in the debate at all, that the fact that he's running at all is essentially a ploy of the enemy. The enemy has brought him to this point because we've got the dialectic, right? We've got the light side of the dialectic and the dark side. Joe Biden's on the dark side of the dialectic. He's controlled by the enemy. Donald Trump's on the light side of the dialectic. He too is controlled by the enemy. The enemy wants Donald Trump to win. They want the light side of the dialectic to have a leg up for a while, or they want them to take the forefront for a while. And so you keep Joe Biden from being able to go into the debates at all to get the nomination if you want the Democrat Party to win. the smart thing to do was to not have him run, because anybody who had two eyes in their head could see that he's not capable of running and winning. And if the American people see it, which they're going to see in a 2-hour debate, that they're going to go,
you know, the word choice there is telling. Can he run and win is irrelevant. Can he serve well? Can he do the job?
Jeez. Doesn't matter, man. We all know that these people are controlled by essentially a corporate machine behind the scenes. To me, it looks like there are all these different layers of analysis. And on any layer of analysis, we see a degeneration of the American ideal into a swamp with swamp creatures fighting for the attention of the masses. And that's really sad.
It is, agreed. Something that I see as a potential risk, a potential outcome, is something like a French Revolution, where whatever comes out in the end, you could say the same thing about the Weimar Republic, and what came out in the end of the politic was the Nazis, not because the Nazis were ever all that popular, but because they just happened to be the most popular in the moment. I feel like we might be in a weird spot there, where Democrats don't have anybody they're willing to vote for, and so they go to some bad place. And I'm not defining that bad place, just worried about a bad place gone to. And I'm not suggesting RFK's bad or anything like that.
This looks like a great juncture at which my thesis may be tested. My thesis being of the lion with eagle's wings having its wings plucked off and having it be made to stand on its hind legs and given the heart of a man. And what that would mean, if it's true, is that we see the American empire loses its dominance in the world. And I know you don't like the term, but we lose our power over the world. We lose our world reserve currency status, and something else comes to the fore. And America, instead of having the character of a beast, is brought to have the character of a man, which would be a very interesting set of circumstances. You know, I can't really say what that means exactly, other than just what it pulls to my imagination. But
do you picture the man in the description as less violent, less dangerous somehow than the beast?
Less bestial, perhaps, not necessarily less dangerous, but having its wings taken off means that it has less dominion. So having less power in the world, being less bestial, being less inclined to dominate the things around it, but more inclined to have the nature of a man. And that's just my feeling, man. I don't know exactly what it means. I would suspect that what I would love to see, and I actually like to be optimistic about this. So optimistically, what I would like to see, what I would hope to see, is that if dominion is taken away, that what we see is we see a resolution of the insane cultural nonsense that has been going on for the past 20, 30, 40, 50 years into something that's more civil, into something that is more where we can live with each other, where we can actually walk down the street and say kind things to people who look different than we do, who follow a different creed than we do, who, you know, where we can sort of look to people's common humanity as a reason for actually having some respect for each other, the way God intended for us to, you know. One of the things he intended is for us as humans not to treat each other badly, but to have some kind of brotherly love, some kind of common good feeling for each other. That's actually something God wants. And I would like to see that. And I would hope that that would be a part of that. It seems like a positive thing to me, given the heart of a man. I mean, you know, maybe there's good to be found in this. Maybe this is a good thing. I would hope so. And I would very much like to see the darkness that has been so prevalent, so in control of our destinies, our society, our national conversation be pushed to the back. I would love to see some actual good come forward. That would be a good thing. Now, there are a lot of people who think that that's not realistic, but I am optimistic. I have hope for that. And I'm trying to be part of that change, right? That's the thrust of everything I'm doing.
1,000%. I definitely would push for the good. I'm not sure how to interpret it. I would worry that the beast is mechanistic and the man is sinful and intelligent.
Well, I suppose that is another possible way to look at it, right? And right.
I the wings, as I understand it, is not dominion; it is authority. That a despot without authority can still have power and do terrible things.
In that particular prophecy, we see wings on another beast immediately after, which says that authority changes hands.
Right, authority.
Which would say that dominion would change hands as well. That's the. You know, turning those words from Hebrew into English, it's questionable. You could use either set of words and maybe get somewhere. So I don't know.
We've had this slight discussion before that the woman went before Jesus and Jesus said, "Let you without sin throw the first stone." You know, forced forgiveness upon a society that was not in a forgiving mood. And what kind of person could possibly do that? The person with authority, not power. The difference between the power to throw the stone and the authority to convince people that's not what we're doing. You know, authority is different than power.
Well, and in the case of empires, trying to differentiate between the two could be curious. I don't know. I don't have a strong opinion on that. I just...
Well, we definitely lose authority through our games with our currency and the way that we are sanctioning and things like that. You could certainly play with your authority in that way.
No question about that.
Certainly a concern. Back to 4th of July. What it is for people as an individual, all I've ever celebrated is the love of my family, the roiling economies, the good things in my life, and I praise my God. I praise Jesus in those moments. I don't care what anyone else says.
Well, and most people celebrate the values that underlie the American ideal. They really do. That's what it's about for most people, is celebrating the values that underlie the American ideal and looking to America as an expression of those values. And that's where I have my grief, but I also do still celebrate those values. I am very much I love freedom. I love the positive power of the individual to make a difference in the grand scheme of things. I am trying to do exactly that. I'm a nobody who has no audience, whose audience is growing very slowly, who's trying to create a story that will affect a large number of people in a positive way. That's what I'm aiming for. So, you know, those American ideals, I live by them, man. I love them.
Totally, totally. And if we've got them, they belong to us and not whoever is trying to use those ideals falsely to get you to go and break those ideals, killing some poor person around the world.
Absolutely true. And, you know, I don't want to present too one-sided a picture, because I start by trying to express the grief that we all feel. And I hope people feel that grief for what the reality of America has turned into. But I also hope that people have the optimism to see what is still available to us, what freedoms we still have, and what difference we can still make, and to walk out and do that, because that is how you change things, is to embody the ideals that you want to see.
Absolutely.
What more do you have to say here? What more thoughts on the...
Just the biggest push for me going through the long, and it's been fairly long, it's about almost 100 years now, of propagandizing, Pravda, using people's idea of what they think a word means, not in that way, to get people to do what they want, right? I call it sloganizing, but it doesn't really matter how you're misrepresenting. We had a discussion the other day about a particular false biblical scholar misusing the word beautiful to mean very focused in that thing, right?
Yeah.
So misusing a word is unfortunately not something that people are very used to dealing with. And, you know, whether it's a misuse of a praise of God to be a hateful statement about somebody, or it's a misuse of a positive word to mean something terrible, or a misuse of a love of country to be a hate of another. None of those things are the intent of the people that created that idea and spread it and put that seed in your heart for it to be a good thing. Just because someone else is saying the ethic is being broken in some way doesn't mean that they're correct, right? So
yeah, I'm with you.
Can you think of any time that we have appropriately and positively used sloganism, the whether it be 4th of July, the "we want you" kind of propagandizing that they do? I mean, is there a good time? Is there ever a good time?
Well, you know, I mean, I think probably there is. I hadn't really thought about it in those terms, and I don't think very fast, so I don't know that I can give you an appropriate answer right now. But as long as the person doing it has their eye on the truth and is trying to express something true, not just something for people to chase, not just trying to goad people into chasing a ball that they're throwing, then I think that using ideals, using words to express emotional ideas and push people in a good direction isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, when I give my talk for podcasts and I say politics is downstream of culture, culture is downstream of faith, myth lives between faith and culture, and it points back at the faith we stand on and forward to lead the way for the culture, I'm using the word myth in a pretty loaded way, in a pretty charged way, but I'm also trying to express a truth there for people to understand how our society's processing of ideas works and what we can do to make a positive change. And I'm just trying to use truth. So in a sense, you could accuse me of that. You could accuse me of taking the word myth and using it to achieve my own ends. But really, I'm just trying to teach people a truth. So,
well, and that's playing with a word and digging into a word and having a learning moment from it that then becomes a bit of a slogan. I think that's different than a slogan like MAGA. MAGA, Make America Great Again, right, is a slogan. And what does that mean? Does that mean, you know, extricate some population? Does that mean everybody acts in a particular way?
Well, right? Normally, what I think you're asking is it ever appropriate to take a set of words and charge it with a particular agenda to the point where the truth behind the words is sort of lost in favor of the agenda? And I think anytime you abuse the truth, you're doing the language a disservice, and you're doing everybody around you a disservice by expressing something that's not true.
Agreed.
Does that answer your question?
I feel like it does, and I'm tending towards, once you've got to something that can be defined as a slogan that has been removed from its definition, that's kind of where you've gone too far.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I have one more topic I really want to hit up on Independence Day and freedoms and things in current common events. we have a discussion in America, and it's a global discussion in ways, about Selective Service, the draft, and whether or not in America we might include a female in a draft, because go females, they can do everything a man can do. And then separately, Ashkenazi Jews in Israel, they're being called upon to join a draft, and they have a religious opposition to being drafted. For anybody that doesn't know, there are three kinds of Jews mostly in the world. Ashkenazis are most of the ones in America. That's European Jews. Then if you look at the Mediterranean Sea, Ashkenazis are north of the Mediterranean. Africa and below the Mediterranean is a second type. And then Africa and south of that is a third type. So those three types of Jews, the ones that mostly that we know of as Jews in America, they are the ones having the trouble not wanting to go to war, right? And Israel having the trouble with it. In America, the conversation of, do we put women in war? What?
It's a stupid question, and anybody who has to ask it has lost perspective on the function of men in society and what society is for.
On the other side of the religious exemptions.
And that one, that's a bigger question, and I don't, you know, we could go into it at some point, but we're actually kind of running out of time, so...
That's fair. I will say just one last thought on the draft for females. I think that it's dangerous and it's bad for society, and it will create damaging ripples through society for women to be mandated to go. But I don't feel like it's appropriate to deny them if a woman is called to go be a spy and do something. I think that that's a fair calling, and women can't be denied.
Well, and women's place in society is a topic for a whole podcast. It really is. And the military is a particularly poignant example. I say let's table that one for now, pick it up sometime soon. And as a closing here, let's just say to our listeners, happy 4th of July, y'all. Go celebrate with your family. Go appreciate the ideals that make America an ideal worth striving for. And at the same time, as we feel that grief, don't let it overwhelm you. Don't, because for years it had overwhelmed me whenever I thought of America. Don't let it overwhelm you. Instead, look to what we as individuals bring into the world when we look at the ideals that matter to us, and let that take precedence in your mind when you celebrate these things. And then by the same token, don't be afraid to acknowledge the truth of what America has become, because you can't fix a problem until you acknowledge that it's there.
And I'll just say God bless you and God bless America.